Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Welcome to an hour of mystery. Later on, we'll hear Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons from 1949. But right now, Vincent Price is Simon Templar, the saint, in Simon Takes a Curtain Call from NBC from January 14th, 1951.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as... The Saint.
They say each man kills the thing he loves. And so I have killed you, my love. But the cruel, merciful knife which parts our flesh shall bring us yet together, in a together which is forever. I am ready, officer.
Pardon me, but where may I wait for Mr. Bennett?
Well, he's still on stage taking bow.
Yes, I know. I was in the audience. My name is Templar.
Oh, yes, Mr. Templar. He's expecting you. You can wait in his dressing room. It's right down the hall there, first on the right. The one with all the flowers on it.
Thank you, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, darling. Did you really?
I enjoyed it.
Thank you. See you shortly.
Mercer.
Come in, my dear. Now, you are sweet, dear, but...
Hello, Mercer. Congratulations.
Simon Templar, how perfectly wonderful of you to come. As I was saying, my dear Shari, you were sweet and utterly charming throughout, but never, never cross in front of me. Never.
Yes, Mercer, I remember. And you were magnificent.
Thank you, thank you. Oh, Shari, this is my old friend, Simon Templar. Templar, Shari Babcock, my leading lady.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Go change, my dear. I'll meet you shortly.
Of course, Mercer. Goodbye, Mr. Templar.
Goodbye, Miss Babcock. Well, your taste is still excellent, Mercer.
I picked my leaves on that acting ability alone, Templar. Now, why I sent for you? By the way, what did you think of the play?
Well, it was...
Yes, I know. I took only 5 curtain calls, an ominous sign. For me, practically a curtsy. Ah, writers. Why, Templar, why don't they have writers like Shakespeare around these days?
It's a plot against actors.
I believe you. Well, perhaps the Bennett name will carry this thing along for a season, but it will be a strain.
Mercer, why did you send for me?
Oh. Sit down, Templar, while I remove my makeup.
I am sitting down.
Well, then stand up. Oh. No, don't. I hate to talk up to someone. I don't work well that way at all. Templar, I'm afraid of this play.
It scares me, too.
No, not that way. Templar, I've begun to notice a peculiar relationship between Mercer Bennett and his roles. Now, you'll think this a bit eccentric of me, perhaps, but it's true. Templar, I'm living my roles.
No.
Wait, let me tell you. I don't know what it is. Perhaps I put too much of myself into a part, but the roles I portray on the stage, I also portray in real life.
For example?
For example, in Time Waits for Tomorrow, I played an actor who marries his leading lady. I married my leading lady.
Astonishing.
Wait. In Crossroads of the World, I played a singer who marries the ingenue. I married the ingenue. Laugh that off.
I don't have to. I didn't marry her. You did.
Yes. But I could go on, Templar. This thing has been plaguing me for years. I have a feeling of fatalism about any role I undertake, that it can't help being realized offstage.
Why get excited about it now?
Because, Templar, because in this play, I not only fall in love with my leading lady, but I kill her.
Well, has the first part come true?
Well, one might say so, yes. She's utterly infatuated with me, of course, and she's a charming thing.
I see. And you're afraid you're going to kill her?
Deathly afraid.
Well, it's the nice seeing you again, Mercer, but
Wait, don't go. I'm not just imagining things. The way the part was originally written, I shot Shari. But in our tryout in Boston, the prop man discovered that someone had put real bullets in the gun.
Are you sure?
Of course I am. That's why I had it rewritten to a knife. We use a rubber blade, of course.
Of course. And you have no idea who put those bullets in the gun?
None. It could have been anyone.
Even you?
That's what haunts me about this whole business, Templar. Could I have done it and not know it? Could I do it again? Oh, you've got to help me, Simon.
Well, all right, I'll do what I can. But it might not be much.
Oh, I'd appreciate it, Simon. I'd appreciate it immensely. And when we of the theater...
But please, no tears. Where should I start?
My agent and business manager will tell you whom to see and take you around.
Oh.
Stuart Jackson. Low fellow.
Well, I'll see him in the morning.
I'm deeply grateful, Simon. Why, I hardly dare look at the girl. I avoid her.
Daddy?
Coming, Shari, darling. Coming. Well, you see, I...
Yes, I know. The show must go on. See you tomorrow, Mercer.
Mighty nice of you to take this on for us, Mr. Templar. I know it's been working on Mercer.
What do you think of this, Jackson? This idea that Bennett has about his roles coming true?
Well, I've represented a lot of actors, Mr. Templar, and they're screwy, every one of them. And I'm not sure Mercer Bennett's not the screwiest of the lot, but he's a great actor.
You think this whole thing is about nothing? Huh?
I didn't say that. Maybe all in the head, but what's in the head gives plenty of trouble. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
And after the notices on the play this morning, he'll be screwier than ever.
Not good?
From Stinkville. And he needed the dough, too.
Oh, I thought Bennett had plenty.
Paying alimony to four wives? Nobody's got that much dough. Well, the first one Bennett wants you to talk to is Lola Enright. She was his first wife.
We're not going to talk to all four.
Lola is the only one in town. Kind of an old lush, but a good kid. She used to be quite an actress.
Well, let's go collect her autograph.
Morning, Lola. Can we come in?
Why, Mr. Jackson, do come in. I hope you'll excuse my deshabille. Just reading over a frightful stack of plays they're begging me to do. Hardly wearing and finding a vehicle.
Skip it, Lola. This isn't the producer. This is Simon Templar, the saint.
Now, why don't you say so? How do you do, Mr. Templar? Sit down.
Thank you, Miss Enright. I've enjoyed your performances many times.
Must be older than you look. What's up, boy?
Mr. Templar, I'd like to ask you a few questions, Lola, about Mercer.
Well, if you're going to talk about him, I've got to be fortified. Excuse me. Mr. Templar, have you ever met my friend?
Huh? Oh, yes, I have.
Oh, good. Then I don't have to introduce you. How about joining us?
Well, I'm very fond of your friend, but not this early in the morning. About Mercer Bennett, Miss Enright.
What about him?
Well, very briefly, he has a fixation about roles he plays on the stage and acting themselves in real life. And in his latest play, he kills his leading lady.
Tell him not to worry. That turkey won't run long enough for him to step on an ant.
Something has occurred, however, to indicate that this isn't all imagination. You know anyone bearing any ill will against Bennett, Miss Enright?
Sure I do. Anybody that knows him.
Oh? Well, how about you, if I may be blunt?
You mean, would I kill his leading lady and frame him with the murder? Let me think it over, Simon. Sure you don't want to say hello to my pal here?
No, thanks.
Well, I do. Mercer Bennett. The problem being, would I like to see him accused of murdering his latest love? Well, I might. I very well might. Anything else I can do for you, Simon? Play Camille, butch candy between acts, tour with the South Pacific Company of South Pacific?
If anything comes up, Lola, I'll let you know.
Oh, you're a nice boy, Simon. I'll give you a tip. Never be seen in public with agents. So long, Jackson. Here's to crime, Simon.
Happy days, Lola.
Yeah? Happy days.
Well, what's the next port of call, Jackson?
Arnold Prince, Mr. Templar. Broker. he says. Also has a wad of dough in the show.
Oh, yes, you told me.
Yeah. Here's his office here.
No secretary. Guess we go right on in, huh?
I guess so. Oh, morning, Mr. Prince. You busy?
Hello, Jackson. Have you seen the notices? Did you see those horrible, terrible...
Mr. Prince, this is Mr. Templer. Simon Templer. He wants to ask a couple of questions.
Why?
Because I think a crime may be committed, Mr. Prince, and I'm trying to prevent it.
You're too late. The crime happened last night when 3 6s of 17 opened.
Yes, I can understand your point of view. Tell me, Mr. Prince, what was your reason for putting money into the show? The play itself?
I'll tell you. The reason was Shari Babcock, and I was made a fool of.
Shari was your girl?
If I hadn't thought so, I wouldn't have put a cent into this egg. I couldn't afford the money.
Do you hold any animosity towards Shari or Bennett?
Toward both of them.
How much animosity?
Just this, Mr. Templer. I have a reputation for being a man it isn't safe to make a fool of. Do I make myself clear?
I think so.
Good. Good day, gentlemen.
Oh, just one more question. Are you what they call an angel, Mr. Prince?
An angel?
You needn't answer that. Good day.
This is Shari Babcock's apartment, Mr. Templer. I hope you don't mind if I let you go in alone.
I shudder at the thought.
Yeah. Well, being Mercer's business manager and agent both, I got a lot of details to look after. He wanted you to talk to Charlie Glenway. He's the author of this bomb. But if you talk to Shari long enough, Charlie'll be along. Get what I mean?
I get what you mean.
See you later, Mr. Templer.
Good morning, Miss Babcock. I don't know if you remember me, but
I... How could I forget? Won't you come in, Mr. Templer? Simon?
Oh, thank you, Shari.
Have you seen the notices?
Yes.
Well, it was to be expected, of course. Charlie's a nice boy, but just not a writer. Just not a writer.
Shari, are you aware of the fact that as long as this play runs, you may be in considerable danger?
Terribly exciting, isn't it?
Huh? You're not frightened?
But that's theater, Simon, dear. Actors living their roles, the excitement of opening night, the smell of grease paint.
Shari, let's not do the grease paint in the veins bit, huh?
Of course.
You know about what happened in Boston?
The real bullets instead of the blanks?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be fascinating if darling old Mercer had actually done it himself? I mean conscious love, but subconscious hate. Fascinating, like Ibsen.
Look, Hedda Gabler, did it ever occur to you that...
Shari, you seen the reviews?
Not Charles, darling, not. Simon Templer, this is Charles Glenway, our author.
The rats desert the sinking ship. You thought the play was pretty hot stuff this time yesterday, Shari. Oh, how are you, Templer?
Thank you.
Don't be rude, Charlie. And if one simply isn't a playwright, one should face it.
Quote, Mercer Bennett, unquote. It was a play before he got hold of it, him and his rewrite. Of course it ended up garbage. It was bound to.
Oh, speaking of rewrites, Charles, darling, I've got some ideas about the second act. My lines simply have to be fixed, you know.
Your lines have to be fixed? Well, you certainly fixed them last night, all right. Why don't you get that dramatic school mush out of your mouth and talk? You think it improves things if nobody can hear you?
In this case, yes.
Am I intruding on anything?
All right. We won't fight, Shari. I don't want to.
Fine, darling. And you will rewrite my lines in the second act.
No.
Yes.
I'll keep score for you.
Who is this guy, anyway? Another Arnold Prince?
I was never anything to Arnold Prince but nice to him, so he put up the money for your show.
How nice were you?
Glenway, I hate you.
Shari, darling.
Mercy, sweet.
Oh, Glenway. And Templer.
Sorry, old man. Shall I leave?
Not at all. I mean, don't rush off. About the notices, Shari, darling. Disregard them. Of course, the play is bad. The thing to remember is that I've carried worse plays than this.
You were younger then.
Jealousy, rearing its juvenile head. But it's a good thing you're here, Glenway. There's a lot of rewriting and fixing to be done. And you might possibly be of some help to me.
I have an earth-shaking suggestion. Why not just do the play as it was written in the first place?
You're questioning my knowledge of the theater?
I think you're over the hill, Jack.
Pay no attention to this scribbler, Mercer.
I find your conduct unprofessional, Glenway.
We of the filter.
And I find your conduct unbecoming to your fellow members in the Townsend Club, Bennett.
Hands.
Hmm? What did you say, Templer?
I have been up since dawn trying to prevent a murder about which I now feel almost indifferent. I have foregone my breakfast, but I find myself unable and unwilling to do so another second. If anyone wants me, I shall be in the restaurant on the corner saving a life near and dear to me, my own. Farewell, Thespian.
Mr. Templar.
Oh, sit down, Mr. Jackson, sit down. But I warn you, if you interfere with my eggs Benedict with Tabasco sauce, you're a dead man.
Mercer phoned me as you were here, Mr. Templar. He wants you to come to the play tonight.
I have seen the play, and every horrible detail is etched with acid on the dark mirror of my mind.
You know, you talk just like Mercer.
It must be contagious.
Oh, we just got word, Mr. Templar. The play is closing tonight. A two-day run.
Just ahead of the lynch mob. Do you carry insurance on your client, Mr. Jackson?
Sure.
And put him in another disaster like this and he'll need it.
Oh, but what I wanted to tell you, Mr. Templar, was this. Mercer's worried about the prophecy, or whatever you want to call it. He's afraid that something will happen to Shari.
And tonight's the last night for it to happen.
You'll be there, Mr. Templar?
Against my complete better judgment, my appreciation of the aesthetic, and in utter disregard of my sanity, I shall be there.
Hello, Mr. Templar.
Oh, hi, Charlie. Where have you been, huh?
Out front. Everything all right back here, Mr. Templar?
Yeah, it's all quiet so far. This is the final scene.
Yeah, the death scene.
Yeah.
He plays the violin to her before he stabs her. You think the audience is buying it, Mr. Templar?
Well, they haven't stormed the stages yet.
Well, it's not a bad play, or it wasn't at first. It's Bennett and the rewrites. Now it's all hash.
How do you like Shari?
As an actor? Promising. A bit theatrical, but she should have a good career ahead of her.
If nothing happens.
Nothing will happen.
Hey, there's Prince backstage. I don't like that.
I'll keep an eye on
him. There's Lola, too. She's...
I know. She's Bennett's first wife.
She's bitter because he hasn't paid her alimony for years. Look. They're going into the death scene.
Yeah, I'm watching, Charlie.
Don't let anything happen to her, Mr. Templar.
Charlie, hey, what's that on the prop table?
Huh? A knife. It's not a real one. It's like the one Bennett stabbed Shari with, a rubber blade.
But if that knife is here, what has Bennett got?
What? Well, I don't know. Templar, I...
Shari! Shari, look out!
Hey, quick! The curtain! Pull down the curtain, quick!
Shari, are you hurt? What happened, Bennett?
I don't know. I started to stab her like I always do, and blood came. I had the wrong knife.
Let me, Templar. Shari, baby. How bad is it? Get a doctor, somebody!
No, doctors to spoil our last moments, darling. Just you and me.
Oh, it will always be you and me, Shari, always.
No. Realization came too late. The bloom with it in the bud. It's fragrant, secret, forever.
Shari.
Next week, East Lynn.
Simon.
Yes, Bennett.
How bad is it, Simon? Is it fatal? Tell me, Simon. I can take it.
Yeah, the doctor said he had great difficulty finding the scratch.
Scratch?
Yes, it was a very minor flesh wound. Shari just couldn't resist playing a deathbed scene. He's got her well trained.
Templar, do you realize what this will do for 3, 6, or 17?
No, what?
Publicity. Reams of publicity. The show will run for months. Where is she?
Oh, she's in her dressing room.
Come on. Shari.
Mercy. You've come to say farewell.
Get up, you lovesick ingenue. Put a bandage on that scratch. You've got a show to do tomorrow.
But, Mercer, I'm dying.
You couldn't be killed with a meat hat.
Wait a minute, Bennett. That's no way.
And I want to see you about some rewrites, Glenway, as soon as I talk to the press. We're not closing.
Mercer, you are closing.
What?
Whether you like it or not, someone tried to kill Charlie tonight, and if the police had to pick a suspect, they would undoubtedly pick you.
Yes, perhaps they would. Perhaps they might even be right.
Say nothing about this stabbing to anyone. Run one more night, tomorrow night, and let everyone know the closing is definite after that, huh?
Why? Why one more night?
We've got one more night in which to catch a potential killer. See that everyone backstage tonight is here tomorrow. Lola, Prince, Jackson, Glenway.
And
you, certainly, Mercer. Definitely you.
They say each man kills the thing he loves. And so I have killed you, my love. But the cruel, merciful knife which parts our flesh shall bring us yet together in a together which is forever. I am ready, officer.
Nothing happened. The play's over, Mr. Temple. Nothing happened. Charlie's safe.
Not quite yet, child.
Well, what do you mean?
Mr. Bennett,
look outside.
Is this
Mr.
Percival? No calls tonight. No calls tonight,
Sam, none.
As you say, Mr.
Bennett.
Don't bring
it up, Joe.
Oh, George, I'm
afraid. Oh, yes, darling. Well, Simon, the role is over. The play is finished. And the leading man did not kill his leading woman.
No, he didn't, Mercer.
Come on, Charlie, let's get out of here.
No, Charles.
Why not, Simon? The play is over.
Not quite yet, Mercer. You forget that in your own play, Charlie, the murder occurred at 11:06. It's now just 10:45.
You're suggesting we stay here until 11:06?
I'm suggesting it very strongly. Charles, would you ask Lola, Arnold Prince, and Stuart Jackson to join us? They're all backstage.
Okay, Mr. Temple.
What are you expecting, Simon?
Charlie, I'm expecting another attempt on your life. There have been two already. I intend to see that this is the final one.
What if it's a success?
If my theory is correct, it won't be.
The saint is never wrong, Shari. Are you?
Well, hardly ever. Let's join the others, shall we? I'm giving a theater party.
How much longer are we going to have to sit here, Templar?
Oh, just a few minutes, Mr. Prince. It's after 11 now.
I'm getting very dry, Simon, old boy.
Patience, Lola, patience.
It's creepy in here with everyone gone. I don't like being the bait in the trap.
Well, you have a whole squad of protectors, Sherry. Except that one of them could be a murderer.
Got any theories on the case, Mr. Templar?
Oh, a few, Jackson. Huh. 3 minutes after 11. Well, I guess we've got time to hear some of them. It will pass the time. In this case, the question seems to be motive. Who would profit by killing Shari? Or who would profit by framing Bennett here with the killing of Shari? Always presuming that the assailant is not Bennett himself.
Thank you.
Mr. Arnold Prince. A motive, certainly.
I agree with you.
A rejected suitor who feels himself used badly.
She's a little...
Why, you...
Gentlemen, gentlemen, no violence until 11:06. Mr. Prince lost money he could ill afford to lose. He thought he lost Miss Babcock to Mr. Bennett, and so had reason to hate them both. Stick around, Mr. Prince.
Don't worry. I wouldn't miss Shari's murder for twice as much dough as I poured in his rap.
Miss Lola Enright. A motive, perhaps?
Love. Desperate, hopeless love for this road company, Barrymore, and hatred for the younger rival. Right, Simon?
Couldn't have done it better myself.
I'll stick around, Simon.
Mr. Mercer Bennett. A strange fixation that he is destined to carry out whatever roles he plays on the stage. A mania, perhaps.
I've tried to get him to an analyst, Mr. Templer, many times. Ask him.
Shut up, Jackson.
Tempers are getting edgy as we approach the hour. Mr. Charles Glenway, one of the best of motives.
What?
Oh, I might warn you, I don't know if the electrician knows we're still here, so we might find ourselves in the darkness.
Simon.
And then it might not happen at all. Actually, where were we? Oh, yes, yes. Charles Glenway.
Charlie couldn't do it, Simon. He...
All right, drop it, you. Drop it, or I'm going to break your wrist. Drop it.
There. All right, Sam, you can put the lights back on. Sam!
Run away, Mr. Temple.
There.
What happened? Who was it?
Jackson.
Yes, Jackson. Pick up his knife, Charlie.
Sure.
Anything to say, Mr. Jackson?
Plenty. But not here.
Smart fella.
But why Jackson Templar? He was my agent. He was making a good living out of me.
Not good enough. He was also your business manager. He told you you were paying alimony to all four of your ex-wives. Lola hasn't gotten anything in years, right?
Right.
Yeah, this suggested the juggling of your books. And then I'm always suspicious of business managers anyway. He also told me he had your life insured. If you were to die for the murder of Shari Babcock, Jackson would be a rich man, and no questions asked about his books, either.
But why, Jackson? You are still collecting commissions from me.
Shall I tell him, Jackson, or will you?
I'll tell him. You're just about through, you big ham. You can't play leading men anymore. You're too old.
Ah, sharper than the serpent's tooth.
The French say, cherchez la femme. The Anglo-Saxons say, Cheshire, la financial angle. Anything I've left out, Jackson?
Yes. I hate actors. I've always hated them. And Bennett, I hated worst of all. Sneering at us all the time. Running us down behind our backs. I hate him!
Well, I've always suspected this about agents. I must be more careful. Now, come along, Jackson. I can get you a long contract with no options.
Templar.
Yes, miss.
After you turned Jackson in, you didn't give the full story to the papers, did you? The full story?
Not yet. Why?
Don't, as a favor to me.
Oh, but this will be wonderful publicity for your show. It will run forever.
I'd rather you didn't.
But why, Mercer?
Well, Jackson's statement about me being too old for Leeds. Of course, it's totally untrue, but if word of a charge like that gets around show business, well, you know...
Oh, I see. My lips are sealed.
Thanks, Chandler, thanks. maybe the trouble is I'm not wearing a tight enough girdle, or maybe chin straps are like nicest.
Actors. You know, Jackson may have been right.
You have been listening to another transcribed adventure of The Saint. The Robin Hood of modern crime. This adventure of the Saint was written by Dick Powell. Our cast included Theodore Von Elst as Bennett and Mary Shipp as Shoddy. Ed Begley was Jackson, Maggie Morley, Lola. Prince was played by Stanley Farrar and Charlie by Bob Clark. Harry Brown was the doorman. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production of His Kind of Woman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that Mr. Price is guest editor of the January issue of Inside Detective, world's largest selling detective magazine. Your announcer, Don Sam.
The Saint, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 14, 1951 on NBC, part of their Sunday afternoon lineup at 4:30. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now on to Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, from October 6, 1949 on CBS. It's the case of the man who invented death.
Rated missing persons cases. Tonight's case is entitled, The Case of the Man Who Invented Death. If you want incredibly fast relief from the pain of headaches, neuritis, or neuralgia, try Anacin. A-N-A-C-I-N. Now for Mr. Keene and the case of the man who invented death. Our scene opens in a rather shabby rooming house in metropolitan New York. A well-dressed, middle-aged man is just descending the stairs to the second floor as a heavy-set woman in an apron calls up to him irritably.
Who's there? Who's climbing up them steps?
It's I, Mrs. Marley. George Rockwell.
Well, if you come to see that crazy Amos Piper, he's not in.
But he must be.
I tell you, he's not in. Tomorrow I got half a mind to lock him out. He hasn't paid his rent in over 3 weeks. And I'm not running a charity home. I'm just a poor landlady who's trying to get along.
All right, Mrs. Marley. I understand. I'll pay Amos rent for him.
Well, that's more like it.
But I'm sure he must be in. I had a very important appointment with him at this hour. I know he wouldn't break it without letting me know. Did you see him go out, Mrs. Marley?
No. It's just that I haven't heard him tinkering around with his fool inventions all morning. Anyway, what with the electricity going bad, I've had more trouble this morning.
The electricity has gone off?
Oh, I called for the serviceman, but he hasn't
come yet. Mrs. Marley, do you smell smoke?
Well, sure I do. It is smoke.
It's coming from under Amos Piper's door. Quick, open it up with your key.
All right, I will. But the place is on fire. There's smoke.
It's just a burned electric wire. Mrs. Molly, look.
Oh, it's Amos Piper. He's lying on the floor.
Don't touch him. Call the police. Amos has been electrocuted. He's dead.
Are you sure that Amos Piper's death wasn't an accident, Mr. Rockwell?
Positive, Mr. Keene.
But if Mr. Piper was fooling around with high-voltage electricity, as you say he was, seems to me he was just letting himself in for trouble.
And I agree with my partner, Mike Clancy. Tell me, Mr. Rockwell, why are you so sure it was murder?
Because someone had tampered with Amos' electric equipment, Mr. Keene. The police agreed with me when I pointed it out. Certain wires had been deliberately changed, and an electric booster had been added, raising the amperage and the voltage. That's why the lights in the rooming house blew out. Amos had used that equipment many times before. It would have happened much sooner if the invention had been dangerous as it was when we found the body.
Just what was he trying to invent, Mr. Rockwell?
A machine for turning base metals like lead and brass into gold.
Saints preserve us. What do you think he was, a magician?
Well, many years ago, Mike, certain men who were called alchemists believed it was possible to turn cheap metal into precious gold.
Yes, that's true, Mr. Keene. But in modern times, we recognize how impossible that is.
Amos Piper must have been an eccentric.
I suppose he was. But he was also a dreamer. One of the kindest men I've ever known. And I'm going to miss him.
How long had you known each other, Mr. Rockwell?
At least 20 years. When we were younger, we both dreamed of being important scientists and startling the world with our inventions. But I was more realistic than Amos. I knew after a while that dreams alone won't make one successful. So I entered business and forgot about inventions.
I see.
I now own a manufacturing plant, but Amos kept right on trying to invent things.
Well, did he ever hit the jackpot, Mr. Rockwell?
No, Mr. Clancy. His big ambition was the gold machine. Once or twice he turned out a few trifling inventions, which he sold. He managed to eke out a small livelihood on his royalties from those. But more often than not, I had to come to his rescue financially. Although, most of the time, he never knew.
I can see that you felt very close to Amos Piper, Mr. Rockwell. Tell me, did he have any enemies that you knew of?
No, Mr. Keene. He was a man who never harmed a living soul. Some fiend devised a way to get rid of him for some reason. And I want to do everything in my power to see that the murderer doesn't go unpunished.
I understand.
That's why I came to you, Mr. Keene. You have a reputation for being one of the greatest investigators in the country. Not only that, but you have a genuine sympathy for the underdog, for people who are wronged. Well, Amos was wronged. No matter how eccentric his ideas were, he was a good man.
And no one has the right to take anyone's life, Mr. Rockwell.
Then you'll enter this case and investigate it along with the police?
I'll do everything I can.
Thank you, Mr. Keene. I knew I could count on you, sir.
Now tell me one thing more before Mike and I have a look at the scene of the crime. You say the day you found Amos Piper's body, you had an important appointment to see him?
Yes. He phoned me the night before and begged me to come over on the following morning.
Did he tell you why?
No, Mr. Keene. He just appeared very excited and said he was on the verge of some great discovery. Up to now, neither the police nor I have been able to find out just what that discovery was.
Well, perhaps this mysterious discovery might provide us with an important clue to Amos Piper's murder. At any rate, we'll keep it in mind, Mark, as we try to put our hands on one of the cleverest killers we've ever come up against.
There's no doubt of his cleverness, Mr. Keene. When you think of the way he set up that contraption to electrocute poor Amos.
If we can bring him to justice, Mr. Rockwell, we'll show him a more reliable electric machine invented by the state, the electric chair for murderers.
Yes?
Are you Mrs. Marley, the landlady?
I am.
My name is Keene. This is my partner, Mike Clancy.
Mr. Keene, the famous investigator? Well, please come in, sir. Oh,
thank you.
What can I do for you, Mr. Keene?
I'd like to look at the room where Amos Piper lived before he was murdered.
Oh, why, of course. Come this way, please. It's on the second floor front. Seems everybody wants to look at that room. First the police, and Mr. Decker, and now you.
And who is Mr. Decker?
Oh, he's quite a gentleman. He comes here lots of times to see Amos Piper. He's in some kind of business, office equipment, I think. He's in the room right now. There's the room, Mr. Keene, right in front of you.
Well, thank you.
I just want you to know that I was a friend of Mr. Piper's, a good friend. And the murder was a terrible shock to me. If I can help you in any way,
I'll be certain to let you know, Mrs. Molly.
Oh, very well, Mr. Keene.
She was certainly anxious to prove what a pal of Amos Piper she was, if you ask me, boss.
Yes, I noticed that too, Mike. Well, let's go in. Oh, excuse me.
That's quite all right. I was just leaving.
Are you Mr. Decker?
Norris Decker, yes. And you are?
Mr. Keene. This is Mr. Clancy, my partner.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. The great investigator. I presume you're here to look into the death of Amos Piper?
Yes. Is there anything you can tell us about it, Mr. Decker?
You can find out all I know, or the police for that matter, by examining that apparatus in the corner. That's what killed Amos.
I'll have a look at it, boss.
Do that, Mike.
It was an unfortunate affair, to say the least. When I first heard about it, I was sure it was an accident. But after talking to the police, I realize now it was premeditated murder.
What made you think it was an accident at first, Mr. Decker?
Because of Amos Piper's idiotic scheme to turn lead into gold. For a while, he almost had me believing it, too.
Hmm. You're a close friend of his?
No, I was interested in his work in a business way. I'm an investor, Mr. Keene. I use my money to back inventions that are worthwhile, particularly ideas in new business equipment.
And is that what you were seeing Amos Piper about, Mr. Decker?
Yes. He told me of an invention he had for a new type of carbon paper, thin enough and strong enough to make over 50 copies at once.
I see.
Well, it seemed like a saleable idea, and I thought we could both make a bit of money out of it. But then he was killed. And the invention has disappeared. And that's why I came here today. I wanted to see if I could find the sample.
That's some contraption, boss. It's set up like some kind of an electric oven.
Hmm.
That was another of Piper's ideas for turning base metals into gold. He was an extraordinary man, but a bit on the eccentric side. And his private life seemed to be even more peculiar.
How do you mean, Mr. Decker?
Well, once I walked in here, Mr. Keene, and found him in an argument with a lovely young girl, at least 30 years younger than he. She wore a mink coat and was fashionably dressed. As I came in, I noticed her motor car and chauffeur in front of the door.
Who was the girl?
I don't know. She left when I walked in, and the landlady told me later that the girl had come once before and had had a terrible row with Piper.
I see. Did she know why?
No, and neither of us knew how a man as simple, a man as poor as Piper, could have any relationship with a woman who was obviously very wealthy and, young enough to be his daughter.
She couldn't have been his daughter. I'm told that Piper never married.
Well, whoever she was,
we... Someone's out in the room now, miss.
The police?
Well, there's Mr. Keene, the famous investigator.
I'll come back some other time, Mrs. Molly.
Mr. Keene. That sounds like the voice of the girl I was just telling you about.
Don't say anything about my being here, please.
Boss, look at the car parked in front of the door. Well, it looks like one of them fancy foreign makes.
Mike, come along. I don't want that car to get out of our sight. We'll follow it and find out a bit more about this mysterious girl and her connection with Amos Piper.
Just went into that house, boss.
Aye, it's certainly an elegant one.
Let's drop in for a chat, Mike.
Well?
I'm looking for a young woman who just entered here. My name is Keene.
What young woman?
Sure, and the pretty one with the fur coat. A chauffeur just left her at the door and then drove away.
You must have the wrong house.
Oh, I'm sure we haven't.
And I say you have. Well,
this young fellow must think we're a couple of kids, boss. Maybe he'd like us to...
He may have been mistaken, Mike.
What, Mr. Keene?
We were halfway up the block when she disappeared. She could have gone around the corner.
But Mr. Keene, with me on two eyes...
I'm sorry to have troubled you, Mr.
Webb. The name is on the door.
Oh, yes, of course.
Good day.
Mr. Keene, you don't really think we made a mistake, do you?
Of course not, Mike. But Mr. Wegg was lying so obviously. I prefer to find out in our own way what he was up to. What time is it now?
It's a little after six.
It'll be dark soon. We can enter the house through the rear. Perhaps we can get a little more information from Mr. Webb and the young woman we followed when they least expected. Information that might lead us to Amos Piper's killer. There's a light in the room right in front of us, Mike. Let's see who's inside.
Right, boss.
I'm leaving the house, Elliot.
Wait, Mike.
And I say you're staying here. Do you want to be picked up by Mr. Keene?
I have nothing to hide. And maybe I can help him solve Uncle Amos' murder.
Now, you listen to me, Lorna. I've got a reputation to think about. Do you want to ruin me in business?
Doesn't my Uncle Amos mean anything at all to you?
No. Besides, he's dead now, and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
That's where we disagree, Mr. Webb.
Elliot, who are these men?
How did you get in here, Keene?
My partner and I decided to enter without an invitation, Mr. Webb. Inasmuch as you were so anxious to keep us out.
Why, I'll throw the two of...
Elliot, it won't do any good, and you know it.
Not only won't it do any good, but I'm not so sure he can manage it.
I overheard you say that Amos Piper was your uncle.
Yes, Mr. Keene. I'm Lorna Webb, and Elliot here is my husband.
May I ask why you made those secret visits to your uncle before he was murdered?
I'll answer that for you, Keene. She was trying to keep me from finding out.
Is that right, Mrs. Webb?
Yes.
But after your uncle was murdered, didn't you realize how serious the situation was? Didn't you think of contacting the police and identifying yourself even then?
No, Mr. Keene.
Why not?
I don't know.
Go on, Lorna. Tell him. Tell him you think I'm a murderer. Turn your own husband into the police for a crime he never committed.
Elliot, why do you talk that way to me? We used to be so happy.
That was before I found out you were seeing Amos again, in spite of what you promised.
What was your objection to Amos Piper, Mr. Webb?
He was nothing but a lazy sponger, Mr. Keene. He knew Lorna married a man with money, and he was just biding his time to take advantage of it.
That's not true, Elliot. I begged Uncle Amos to come and live with us, but he refused. I know I handled this the wrong way. And I know you were jealous of Uncle Amos.
Jealous?
I don't quite understand the situation, Mrs. Webb. Perhaps you can explain.
Mr. Keene, I'd been fond of Uncle Amos ever since I was a child. I worshipped him then. But Elliot, my husband, didn't want me to worship anyone, even a poor old man. He wanted all my affection for himself. I'm afraid now I've made a mess of things and I'm going to regret it.
Mr. Webb, does that explain your attitude?
Mr. Keene, I admit I didn't like Amos Piper, but I wasn't jealous enough to kill him. That's ridiculous, and there's no basis for believing it.
Is that what you believe, Mrs. Webb?
No, Mr. Keene. Of course I didn't believe my own husband killed my uncle. If I did, I wouldn't be here now.
We followed you here from the rooming house where your uncle lived, Mrs. Webb. Why did you return there today?
To get Uncle Amos things, to look for his invention. He has a sister, my Aunt Martha, who is old and very poor. Whatever Amos had should go to her as his closest survivor.
Exactly. The carbon paper? Or the machine he hoped would turn metal into gold?
No. I was looking for the dye.
The dye? Does that have anything to do with the new type of carbon paper he invented?
I don't think so. I remember Uncle Amos telling me something about that carbon paper. He said the idea had been stolen from him.
Did he know who stole it, Mrs. Webb?
No. But he really didn't care. He didn't think it amounted to much. But the dye seemed to be worth something. Even Elliot thought so.
I don't know anything about it, Lorna.
When I described it to you, you said it might make a fortune.
Well, maybe it was another one of your uncle's crackpot ideas, like the gold machine.
Just what do you know about the dye, Mr. Webb?
Well, Mr. Keene, according to Amos, it was a brighter, faster, and cheaper dye than any other now on the market. And he could make it in all colors. But he might have been dreaming again.
I wonder if Mrs. Marley, the rooming housekeeper, would know anything about that dye. Or the carbon paper, for that matter. Mrs. Webb, would you get your coat?
What for?
I want your wife to accompany me back to Mrs. Marley's rooming house, Mr. Webb.
You've got nothing on Lorna. I won't let you involve her in that murder.
Then you do care what happens to me after all, Elliot.
Do you think I ever really stopped caring?
Oh, then we have nothing to be afraid of. You come too. Let's do everything we can to help Mr. Keene and Mr. Clancy.
Is it okay if I go along, Mr. Keene?
Of course, Mr. Webb. As a matter of fact, I want everyone involved in this case to be present when we discover the solution to Amos Piper's murder.
Mrs. Marley, the Roman housekeeper, doesn't seem to be in, Mr. Keene.
The door may be open, Mike. Try it.
It is, Mr. Keene.
Good. Come inside, Mr. and Mrs. Webb.
All right, Mr. Keene. Come along, Lorna.
The house is pitch dark, sir. There's no one here. Saints preserve us. What's that?
What is it, Mike?
I stumbled into something here on the floor. Wait till I get my flashlight out.
Mr. Keene!
It's the body of a man.
Boss, it's Mr. Rockwell.
Yes. And his neck's been broken.
Oh, no!
Steady, Lorna.
Keep your flashlight on his body, Mike. I just noticed something on his wrists.
It looks like some kind of paint.
It's a dye. A green dye.
Oh, you let me alone!
What was that?
Sounded like Mrs. Marley.
She's upstairs, boss.
Yes, she's probably in the room where Amos Piper was murdered. Mr. Webb, you and your wife stay down here and don't touch the body. Come on upstairs, Mike.
Take your hands off me. There you go, you hear?
Certainly. After I turn you over to the police.
It's Mrs. Marley and Mr. Decker, boss.
Oh, Mr. Keene. Oh, you've come at precisely the right time.
Well, what's going on here?
If you're looking for Amos Piper's murderer, there she is.
That's a lie. I didn't kill him.
Are you also going to deny you stole one of his inventions and sold it in your own name before it was patented?
How do you know about this, Mr. Decker?
Because I caught her one day coming out of the patent office, Mr. Keene. And I investigated. She stole Amos Piper's invention. Then killed him so he wouldn't turn her in.
Do you deny that, Mrs. Marley?
Mr. Keene, I'll admit I stole it and sold it to someone. But I only made a couple of $1,000 on it. And I certainly didn't kill the old man for that.
What about George Rockwell?
What?
The dead man downstairs.
Dead man?
You mean another man's been murdered, Mr. Keene?
Yes, Mr. Decker. Didn't either you or Mrs. Marley see the body down there in the front hall?
Oh, I didn't, Mr. Keene.
Who entered this room first?
She did. I found her here when I came up. I was still searching for that new invention of Amos Piper's. I found her here fooling around with that devilish contraption in the corner that killed Amos.
Well, what have you to say for yourself, Mrs. Marley?
I didn't mean any harm, Mr. Keene. I just wondered if there was anything in what Amos Piper believed, that he could turn metal into gold. I thought maybe I'd find something, and this was the first chance I got to look for myself. Up to now, this room's been filled with policemen and investigators. But I never touched that machine. Why, I'd be afraid to.
We've caught you red-handed, and you know it. Take her away, Mr. Keene. I'll be happy to testify against her.
I imagine you would be. To save your own skin, Decker.
What?
Decker, did you say you caught Mrs. Marley red-handed? Well, I've caught you green-handed.
You mean here on my hand? Why, this is just pain.
Really? And when did you get it on your fingers?
Well, 2 or 3 days ago.
Odd that it took so long to dry. You left some of it on George Rockwell's wrists.
What?
Only a man with strength could have killed Rockwell. He was a pretty big man himself. But someone with a knowledge of, well, let's say, judo or jiu-jitsu could have accomplished it.
You must know a little something about judo yourself, Keene.
Enough to tell when it was used to break someone's neck. Search him, Mike.
Don't make a move, I warn you.
Oh, he's even got himself a gun, boss.
Now, you're pretty clever, Keene. I've got to hand it to you. I imagine you even know where this green dye came from.
Amos Piper's invention.
Right. And tonight I found a sample of it at last, along with a formula. The old fool never even realized he had something that would bring a fortune on the world market.
But you did, Decker.
I most certainly did. I also knew I had to take care of Rockwell. You see, he was a little too close to Amos Piper. And sooner or later he might have surmised why Piper was killed. And then he'd have thought of me.
I'm afraid you won't get away with it, Decker. You posed as an old man's friend and benefactor to defraud him of his valuable invention, then killed him to cover your fraud. You're not going to get away with either the theft or the murder.
And who's going to stop me?
Maybe I will, mister.
Come on and try it if you want a bullet through your head.
Don't move, Mike. He means what he says.
I'll say I do. And what's more, I'm...
He tripped on the machine.
Help me! Help!
Mr. Keene!
Cut your electricity off outside. Quickly, Mrs. Marley.
I will, Mr.
Keene. Boss, he's getting a terrific electrical shock.
Don't touch him until the current's been cut, Mike. He'll pass the shocks on to you.
Sans preservis. He's dead, Mr. Keene.
Yes. He shorted some wires in that machine when he fell over it.
You mean he died the same way his victim died, boss?
In Amos Piper's case, the electrocution was deliberately planned. Decker's was caused by a short circuit as he tripped over the machine. In any event, Mike, the result was a form of poetic justice. Amos Piper may have thought he was inventing a machine that turned things into gold, but it appears as though he actually invented death.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel Mr. Keene. The radio sequel is originated and produced by Frank and Ann Hummert. Dialogue by Lawrence Klee. Bennett Kilpack plays Mr. Keene. It is on the air every Thursday at this time. Don't miss Mr. Keene next Thursday when the kindly old Tracer turns to the Silver Dagger murder case.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, on Tuned to Yesterday. That episode first aired on CBS on October 6th, 1949. And with cases closed, that's it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.